He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Hello to this week's show of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. It is weather-wise a moisturous spring day. In the economic news, we have possibly some hope for lowering fuel prices as this show is being done. Oil prices were plummeting on the world markets. We'll see whether the gas prices, which go up like a rocket and float down like a feather, make a descend today across the board, across our listening area, because it was widely varied over this last weekend. And I'm looking forward to seeing whether the plunging oil price that went down overnight over maybe some calm in the Middle East are going to result in lower prices for fuel, oil, car, gas, and diesel fuel. Diesel fuel is atrocious, I must say, Jay.
Yes, it is.
$5.49 at one place, and who knows what it is elsewhere.
I drove up to New Hampshire on Thursday thinking I'd find cheaper diesel, and I got back and I filled up at $4.89, and 24 hours later it was at $5.49, like everywhere else.
So you put in 10 gallons, you save 70 cents a gallon maybe, or 60 cents?
No, I by the time I got back, I put over 20 gallons, so I saved a ton of money on that one tank.
Okay, well, that's wonderful.
But it still cost me $110.
It's also interesting to note that I have learned through some sources that apparently this area in the Gulf of Hormuz, or in the Gulf, we don't get any of the oil benefits if the Hormuz Straits are operating fully. So that should not be affecting any of our fuel prices in our country, as far as I know. And I don't have a lot more to say about it, but that's what I think our listeners should know. So Hormuz is affecting the other parts of the world, not us.
So let's talk about cars.
Okay. I have a firsthand edition test drive and comments about the 2026 Jeep Cherokee, which is hitting the dealers' lots as I went to Tarrington to a Jeep dealer and had a very nice test drive in the newest version of cars that I have responsibility of three of.
Did you buy one? No,
I'm not buying one. I'll get to that in a moment. It's interesting to note that these are early production models or early production, let's say, offers out there. There are only three models you can choose from. There's a basic one, which was in my day when I bought it, 14, was called the Sport. It's now, I can't remember what it's called because I can't see my computer. But the Laredo is the middle grade one, and then there's the Limited. And here is the base price of a Laredo, which is what I test drove, is under $40,000. The price of the vehicle I looked at was before taxes and licensing and all that was $41,300+. And it was pretty well equipped, but I'll go first to the ride. I took a 5-mile test drive instead of the normal 4 rights and you're back at the dealership, which seldom is 5 miles. The salesperson with me let me go on some different roads, some where I could experience the performance of the one engine that's available on the new models. There is no alternative V6 versus turbo 4 versus non-turbo 4, which had been available in the which are three engines that were available in the last production line of these cars. And it is a turbo 4 1.6-liter engine combined with hybrid batteries. Now, that engine was surprisingly efficient and also sprightly. It does not equate to the turbo 4 in the last generation of the Cherokees, which has been out of production for, I think, 1.5 or 2 years. But the acceleration was very good. I don't know. I didn't get on where I could pass cars on a road to see how good it was instantly, but there was very little turbo lag, mostly because I think the battery boost of the electric battery componentry jumps in and helps boost the power of the gasoline part of the powertrain. There is no nine selectable speeds in the transmission. It is a CVT, constant variable range transmission, like some other cars have or vehicles have. So you don't feel yourself shifting through gear ratios like you do in the older versions. That is seemingly not a disadvantage in my test drive range.
Okay, so let me go ahead and jump to the point. Let's get to the point.
Okay,
how does it stand out? How is it different from the previous model, and how does it stack up against Mazda CX-5, Honda CR-V, Toyota RAV4, the big hitters in that segment of the market?
There's one model. It is a fossil fuel hybrid vehicle only. No non-hybrid vehicle available, or no all-electric vehicle. How it stands up against that list of cars or SUVs, I can only contemplate, because I haven't driven most of them in the hybrid format. This hybrid is very good. The vehicle itself is physically bigger than the old Cherokee by, I think, 2 or 3 or 4 inches in length and maybe an inch in width.
I'm surprised we haven't heard.
The ride is very comfortable. I was able to test it on some fairly undulating, bumpy town roads, and it felt more comfortable than the past generation of Cherokees, of which I am very familiar with. It was quiet. It's got a touchscreen for many of the controls, along with voice control override capability. It does have knobs, two knobs for radio. That is volume on the left knob, which is the way it's always been in the older versions of vehicles, and a right knob for scrolling through the range of stations that you get wherever you are with this vehicle. Go ahead.
It's just like more like everybody else, bland. And I mean, has it lost a bit of its way? I
think it's lost a bit of its way in the following manner. When Jeep brought out the older Cherokees, they talked about how the knobs were big, so that if you were a truck driver or you were wearing gloves, you could turn the knobs. You can't do that on the new vehicle if you've got gloves on because of cold weather. Now, I know not many people wear gloves inside a car, so that's a minor tick. But the other major controls were on a touchscreen. I did not, in a 15-minute test drive of going 5 miles or whatever it is, you don't get to sit around and learn about the new technical features, which are not on the older models. So there's a lot of new technology in there, and whether that's a plus or a minus probably depends on the technical capability of the owner user. And yes, you can learn all these things after you have a new vehicle long enough to get familiar with all the new features that the high-tech componentry adds to the new vehicles that are coming off the assembly line. There are some manufacturers that are being smart and maintaining a more knob control in some of their vehicles, even as we are in the 2026 model year.
So
I like the interior. Let me just continue, because the interior is very nicely done. I happened to be in, the seats were comfortable. The performance was good. The mileage rating, I didn't get a chance to really rate the mileage, but the sticker says you're going to average 35 miles per gallon in the mixed highway city driving, which is better than probably most of the vehicles are equal to or better than many of the vehicles that you mentioned before as competitors. I happen to like the exterior design of this vehicle. It's not as unique as the older generation Jeeps were. That's got, and in terms of the lighting design of the front end, I don't know what it looks like in the back end, but I think it'll sell. Where I don't know anything about, I don't know its off-road capability. I mentioned to the salesperson about my concern of being stuck on a beach of soft sand and whether that CVT transmission would have enough torque to get me out of it if I needed to get away from a rising tide. He came up with a very interesting answer, which I bought hook, line, and sinker, but couldn't prove that it's correct or not unless I owned one of these vehicles and tried to go out on a beach with soft sand with a rising tide. He said,
how many times have you done that?
He said it will use the battery mode only in the mud and snow mode, the mud and rock mode. You do have four modes of drivetrain. You have sport, automatic, snow, and rock. I think it was mud and rocks or something. I don't know whether that's true about that, but that would override my concern about a CVT transmission not having the torque pull capability if you were really mired in muck and trying to get out of it. Of course, I don't think very many people are going to ever take their Jeeps off the road. I think fewer will take this particular model. There's not a Trailhawk version, which is the off-road alternative to the non-Trailhawk versions of the older generation. And that had a different transmission ratio. It had a different height of ground clearance, and it had different underbody components, which were more tuned into being defensive against things that you might hit with your underbody in a non-off-road capable vehicle. Jay?
None of this sounds life-changing as far as...
It's not life-changing. It's life-changing
but that's
in one
me.
Area, and so, that is the miles per gallon it gets. It is very good on the sticker, and I believe that I've been able to exceed the sticker ratings on most of my vehicles. I don't think 98% of the users of cars actually ever match the sticker ratings. So the sticker ratings are there because the manufacturers had to prove to the EPA or whatever that they could get miles per gallon that would meet the then current standards, which have been lifted and are no longer around. So boasting about high mileage on a sticker is of little use in terms of real world reality of use going forward.
All right, moving on. So I was driving back from New Hampshire last week, and passed a new Subaru Outback, and
yes,
it just looked
like it.
Well, why don't you go get one?
No, I don't want to get one.
I think, speaking of losing their ways, I think Subaru has, I really do not care for the new styling on the Foresters and on the new Outback, but that's a personal thing. I also think that this choice of going totally SUV and moving away from what was originally a wagon and then a wagon on steroids with clad fenders, I think long term, I don't know where this is going. Subaru is going more mainstream. You can see that. I think Subaru is dropping some versions of the WRX, which was the sports version of the Impreza, which had a cult following and was, active in motorsports, in rally racing, and just created this image of a cool, different car brand. And now they've gone mainstream. And I'm not sure that they're going to, I don't see the point. And I'm kind of skeptical of the future of Subaru. But hey, I've been wrong before.
I want to jump in on this, this cult of all the manufacturers bringing forth off-road capable models or units within the model. Honda's got a Trail Sport moniker on some of their mid-sized to what I would call larger SUV vehicles. And I believe Ford is heading that way with the Bronco. I read a recent article about how Lincoln is going to get a version of the Bronco. And it's sort of like the Lexus versus the Toyota line of vehicles. The Lexus is a luxury line, but they too have cars with off-road capabilities. The Audi Q5 has got off-road capability in the drivetrain options that are on a knob in the vehicle or on a push button, including off-road. One, I think it's titled off-road in the Q5 that my wife has, and that's a 2021. So all these car manufacturers seem to think that if their cars are not able, at least in print, to go off the main highways and byways that 98% or 99% of the users are going to be stay on, they're going to sell more vehicles. I don't think they sell more total, but they may spread out the variety of the models that get sold to equate to the total number of a particular line of vehicles that comes out each year.
So let me go on a side note, and then I want to get back to dumb marketing, if I ever saw dumb
Okay.
marketing.
All right.
As far as the ultimate off-road version of a streetcar, and there is one going through town, I've seen it once or twice, is the ultimate off-road Porsche 911. Which is a 2023, 2024, I'm not Porsche 911 the car. So they've made this off-road rally version of the 911, and it's pretty much a limited edition. I think they've built it in, I think 2023, 2024, and I don't believe they still make it now. But it's got clad fenders like a Subaru Outback, and it's a little higher off the ground. It has a roof rack with lights, and you can put an extra gas tank, gas can for when you run out of gas in the desert. But I think the coolest use of it is as a winter vehicle, and I have seen it on the wintry roads lately. And anyway, put snow tires on that thing and a ski rack, and I think you've got the ultimate off-road vehicle. But that's just me.
No, that is just you, and probably there are as few of you with that same opinion as
Well,
there
there are very few of those
are as
cars.
there are models of that car itself on the road. Of course, the ultimate off-road vehicles we're talking about are really Jeep Wranglers, Ford Broncos, Mercedes, whatever the off-line road is that, and the what's that new one that comes in that's custom built that we've seen a few of around here, the new Toyota Land Cruisers. And the like. I think all this other bluster you talk about marketing is just for marketing capability, so that if they've got a Honda lover in their lineup of vehicles, but they don't have an off-road capable vehicle, they might lose that Honda owner. So be it. I mean, marketing
Yeah,
is really crazy. Now, let's go
let's
to
get
marketing.
back.
I want to go to marketing for another minute and a half or less.
No, I want to go for more than that, so let me
Well,
start.
okay, you can go follow me up, but the new Jeeps. Don't come. The Jeeps came from the outset of 2014 up till the end of that model round in 2023, a cold weather group that included all you needed for cold weather driving. And the all you need part was the inclusion, without having to order it extra, of the heated steering wheel. Guess what? And two of the three models of the Jeep, new Jeep, it does not come with a heated wheel, but it can come with heated seats and heated outside mirrors. But you cannot even order a heated steering wheel on the new two of the lower versions, the limited being the exempt
Okay,
model from
Robin,
this.
you're just going to
No,
have to
but I
get the
want
higher
cars. If
version.
anybody wants to look for Jeeps,
They don't.
the people who have heated steering wheels, once they've experienced a heated steering wheel of the car, just about 100% of them don't want to ever have to buy a car without a heated steering wheel availability or
We can
steering.
agree on that. We can
Okay.
agree on that.
So Jeep has just blown it in the marketing department. And this may be something that they will rectify when the
I
marketing
don't
gets
think
going.
so. They've been pretty good at messing things
No,
up.
you don't know Jeeps. So aside, you can continue any way you want.
I wanted to talk about in the list of 25 cars or so that a car and driver is looking forward to seeing in the next year or two. I went down the list and a few cars that are worth mentioning, but I did see a Corvette SUV, and then and I just had to shake my head, and I go, GM is again doing one of the dumbest marketing things ever. It's on par with Ford doing a electric Mustang
And Ford's producing that vehicle you just talked to us about. Yep.
You're talking about Chevy and the Corvette, GM and the
And
Corvette?
yeah, and comparing it with your Porsche off-road vehicle you just discussed at length.
There's a big difference. Porsche is a brand. To expand the brand, they came out with it's a brand within a group. Porsche has to sell vehicles as a brand. GM has a gazillion brands. They don't need to sell a Corvette SUV, especially when Corvette dealerships are basically incorporated in probably Chevy dealerships mostly. And Chevy has a bunch of SUVs, and you have Cadillac SUVs, and you have Buick SUVs. I just think coming out with a Corvette SUV doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Well, I
And
agree, of course.
the fact that Ferrari is doing so, again, Ferrari is a small brand, and if they want to sell more cars, they have to sell more models. I don't really like the idea of them putting out an SUV, but
Well, you've just confirmed what I just said to our listeners a few moments ago, that all the manufacturers seem to think that they've got to jump on the bandwagon of having a model that has SUV slash off-road slash capabilities, because they think they're going to sell markedly more of that.
Then again, I've
A
been wrong
Ferrari with
before.
that kind of thing, and a Corvette with that kind of thing, and I believe a Porsche in that kind is, they're just not made for off, they're not off-road vehicle companies.
No, but you know, they probably will come out with a very
Yep, and they'll
capable
sell
vehicle.
one or two of them.
No, probably a few more. And the more I think about it, maybe they're not wrong. I don't know. The other marketing thing I wanted to talk about is Jaguar, after completely being wiped out and having zero product, no, one electric product, is coming out, I guess, with the i-Type. So they're looking at coming out with, I believe, an electric vehicle, rebranded, trying to go more up, even more upscale, and compete with the Bentleys and the Rolls-Royces of this world. And I did notice that they have the styling of it is still based on the outgoing designer's new branding that looks more like a watch or jewelry.
Yeah,
Yeah,
amen.
I know how you feel about it, and I feel pretty much the same way. But it'll be interesting to see if they can actually reposition the brand on the market. I'm kind of skeptical, but we'll see. I don't know how you feel about it.
I agree with you totally on Jaguar. Jaguar lost its way when they had that some kind of jewelry type designer. And put out an abomination of a design plan that fortunately they got the design, they got fired instead of bringing that kind of vehicle to market. I have not seen any of the newer, the succeeding designs that have been coming out with the new design group that has supposedly been hired to try to reinvent Jaguar to bring them back to the US roads.
By the way, the outgoing design chief, who actually only we thought mistakenly that he had been fired months ago, he actually only just left the company. But he's also responsible for the newest Land Rover, Range Rover, which I think is a pretty, which is a very attractive vehicle. So the guy didn't do all bad, Buddy.
No, that's true. I would agree he didn't do all bad, especially if he is the responsible for the Range Rovers. They're basically selling everything they're producing, as far as I can tell, in the United States and at the Range Rover level, which is the highest level. And I understand that if you want to go buy one, you get the luck of the draw if any dealers have anything that's not already pre-ordered and sold. And it can take weeks, if not months, months, if not weeks, to get one spec'd out to what you want to do. And I think most Range Rover owners are pretty sophisticated in what they want in the as far as the interior componentry is concerned. But they look great. They've held their style pretty well throughout the last 5 to 10 years, I think, at the Range Rover level. And we're talking about the highest model that they put out, which is a six-figure model for sure. And good for Range Rover. But if it's the same designer, I don't know where he went wrong on the Jaguar. But in my opinion, as you've heard and the listeners have heard, was not very high about what he was trying to promote as a potential design, new design range for the Jaguar model. Anyways, do we have anything to talk about driving? It's as bad as ever. Drivers do not use turn signals until they're practically stopped. Sometimes they put the turn signal on the right and go left, and vice versa. That's probably dyslexia in action. I don't know. They still don't like to run their headlights sometimes until somebody flashes at them and they realize that they're not being seen, if they even realize that. But there are too many people. This morning, I came up in a foggy trip from New Canaan area and in a row of cars. And you don't see these cars without headlights. They don't jump out at you like cars with proper lighting that's being used in visual conditions that are less than perfect.
Well, I'm about to hit the road and spend the next 5 or 6 hours on the road, so I'm sure I'll encounter a few non-lit cars along the way. But
well, pay attention for future discussions, because it's just too bad that people are just seem to forget that turn signals are there. They're installed to be used whenever you're making a turn off of the main road that you are driving on. Would you agree or disagree? And it would be nice to be, it'd be civil if they would let the people behind or in front of them know, not at the point of actually making the turn off of the road, so that people could slow down and or avoid running into them in the back, because they knew exactly in advance what the vehicle ahead of them or coming at them was going to do. That is just becoming an increasingly noticeable condition to me.
Robin, I don't disagree with you, but
okay.
People are going to be what they're going to be.
They are.
So be safe out there. Hey, so if we still have a few minutes, here's a question I came about. What's the legendary car that doesn't deserve the hype, in your opinion? I know it's an open question. We're not going to answer that in the time.
A legendary car?
Yeah, that doesn't deserve the hype that it gets.
I don't have an answer. I'm sorry. What's your idea of it?
I'm not sure. What's the best all-around car?
Probably an SUV that has got the proper height off the road, plus a comfortable suspension that can handle different curves and bumps and all that and keep the driver comfortable. But can I give you one? I don't know. Range Rovers have got pretty good suspension systems. This new Jeep I drove, I didn't really get in a real bump.
No. Let's stay in the best all-around cars.
Best all-around would be some kind of mix in the SUV range of cars.
A great wagon.
Well,
why can't somebody make a great wagon with a 6-speed manual?
BMW could do that.
I think they do.
In Europe, they may.
They're
bringing
it's
back,
funny.
They're apparently bringing back a wagon. They're going to call it a wagon. A lot of these cars, the Subaru Outback looks like a wagon.
It's not a wagon anymore. It's an SUV. It looks like a cardboard box.
Okay. What does a wagon look like? Santa Fe?
No, there are plenty of nice wagons out there. There have been. You've owned one or two smaller wagons, but wagons don't have to be, Volvo in the V60, V90,
They were true wagons in the old Ranger
BMW
line.
3 Series, which there's talk about them coming back with the new 3 Series would come out as a with a wagon, including in the US. I'm not holding my breath, but we'll see.
Maybe we talk about wagons. You watch for wagons on your next trip. And until next time, this is Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach. And we hope you enjoyed this show.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.